Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
The following includes conversation relating to cryptocurrency. The information provided and discussed is strictly for educational and informational purposes only. Any use of any information is done so at your own risk. DV Radio LLC, as well as the hosts and guests of the show, take no responsibility if you wish to use any of the information in your daily life. Again, the topics discussed are strictly for informational and educational purposes only.
I am Chris, the CEO.
My name is Paul. I'm the COO.
I am Chris, a.k.a. Little Chris, the Chief Technical Officer.
My name is Zach.
I'm the Chief Marketing Officer, better known as the WEN Marketing Officer, because it never gets done, right?
Affinity. Hour-long show, we will talk about Affinity, crypto in general, DeFi, blockchain technology, and just talk about anything, whatever the hell we feel like talking about.
Get to know us at a little more personal level.
Babbling nonsense.
Is there cursing rules or anything?
No, you say whatever the fuck you want.
I think they'd be more worried if you didn't curse.
Love these guys.
Show me the money!
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to another Affinity Protocol. It is Sunday, March. It's May 7th, 2023. And, yeah, it's a pretty damn good morning. Before we jump into it, I just realized too, and don't forget that next Sunday is Mother's Day. So make sure you take care of all the mothers out there. Guys, how's everything going? Paul? Chris? What's that came
ready
back
to get some yard work done today, man. I'm already mad productive. I changed both engine and cabin air filters and both the cars this morning.
Already?
Already, guy. Bro, you got to remember, my kid be waking up at like 5:45, 6 o'clock, come running in the room, and then falls back asleep. So by then I'm already up, like it's over. So I was up, I was planning my day out, so now I got some yard work and stuff to do after this today. It's going to be a good day, get some stuff done. Get some time outside in this finally nice weather we got coming.
Yeah. It is pretty damn nice.
It is nice, though. My ass got to stay inside all day.
It's a good place.
Have we never talked about how our drum track on the intro sounds like a specific website?
No.
Okay. Well,
is that not on purpose? I've been thinking that the whole time.
I don't know. I don't know. If you want to say it on here, we got to talk about it off here because I don't know.
The old hubbub.
Oh, I know that track. I believe, maybe mistaken. I think that track was custom made by somebody that Bo knows.
I feel like it sounds more like the drum track that goes on with, that movie Loose Change.
Yeah, because
they're getting intense and describing stuff.
I remember him sharing with me, and it was called like Old Man something. I think, I don't know. I can't remember. But yeah, I think it was a custom track. Maybe it was inspired by frequent visits to said website.
Oh, shit. We had a good weekend now, didn't we?
Yeah, my night actually went pretty late last night. That's why, I mean, I wasn't going to be up at 5 a.m. changing car parts and stuff, but maybe a little later I got some work to do. But yeah, yesterday was good. Before we get into that, it's funny because Paul, I sent you that text yesterday. So we went to the conference and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I'll tell you this. So we went up to Boston for the ideas, conference, and my wife said, hey, let's go out to dinner when you get back. Right. Cause the kids were staying at the in-laws house. I said, okay, no problem. Go out to dinner. And usually when that happens, there's a particular Mexican restaurant that she always wants to go to. And on the drive home, I was telling Paul about it. I said, hey, I already know when I get home, she's going to say, I want to go to this restaurant because it's the same one every time. And I said, I'm not going to go to that one. It's pretty good, but I want to go somewhere different this time. And I'm on my way home. I drop Paul off because we carpooled up there, and I call her on the way, and I said, "Hey, let's start thinking about where we want to go, because it's already, I think at that point it was damn near 6:30. I'm like, let's think about where we want to go so we get something to eat." And she immediately names that restaurant. I'm like, "Nah, let's think of a couple others." Names a couple others, and I'm like, "Nah, let's go there." So we ended up going to the Mexican restaurant again. But it's good. It's good.
Man, you gotta put your foot down, man.
Well, you know, to be fair, you know, she did have other options that she wanted to go to. And, you know, I'm the one that said, "Nah, I really don't feel those other ones." So I couldn't really go back and say, "Well, if I don't have any ideas and I'm rejecting those others," I really couldn't say, "Well, you know, think of some more." I wasn't going to be that guy. So, you know, if I couldn't think of anything.
But you could have brought your own to the table is what I'm saying.
That's true. So but you could
have. That's where you fucked up.
That's
not
me. Yeah, that's not me. That's why I just said, "Okay, let's go. Let's do your first choice." But like I said, they do have that. Those enchiladas, man, they're good.
Man, them enchiladas also expensive, kid. I was looking at that menu. I was like, "Hold up, though, $25 for 3 enchiladas, man. Somebody doing something wrong over here." Yeah.
But they're damn good. And then we went from there. You know, I had a couple margaritas as well. And then we ended up going to, for whatever reason, she's like, "Oh, I want to take a walk through Target." All right, so we ended up going through Target for about 15,
terrible 20 idea.
Minutes. And then we went to the bowling alley that's attached to the mall. So we ended up getting a lane there, and we bowled for about an hour and a half. I got me I forget the name of this beer, man, but I got me a tallie in it, and it wasn't bad. It gave me a stomachache afterwards, but did that, played a little bit in the arcade. What?
You had a whole ass day.
Yeah, for real. I didn't get home. I think we got home at about 11:30. Yeah, so it was a good night, man. Good to hang out with the wife. Had a good time. But yeah, that's how my night went.
You doing the barbecue place today?
Oh, I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Oh, man. You're going to be missing out if you don't.
Yeah, I got to see what the situation is after Affinity Protocol. Got to see what's going on. I know we're going to take my daughter to the tennis courts. Play a little tennis.
Man, I'll slap your daughter still at some tennis.
I'll fuck you boys up at some table tennis. You already know.
I got one in my basement, man.
I'll say less. I'm on my way. Fuck work today. I'm right at my exit. I'm going to run right past it. I'm on my way.
That thing hasn't been used in years either.
That was my go-to. That and some pool. I mean, obviously, everybody can get down. You know, in the military, we didn't have much to do in the fucking game room, but usually the pool table is full, so I learned some fucking ping pong, man. That shit is so much fun. Yep. So much fun.
No doubt, man. I try. Not that good at it.
Let's talk about yesterday a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about yesterday. So ideas. We went to this conference up at, forget the name of the building, it's MIT something or other, up in Boston. And it was a pretty good. Say what?
CIC building.
CIC building. Okay. What's CIC stand
for? Oh, no, it was a weird building, though.
It was. You want to talk about the conference, Chris, Paul? You want to talk a little bit about it? I'm not talking the whole time.
Zach. I mean, there was a lot of good discussion. Like I said, after the DeFi panel spoke, I was actually kind of excited to see the mentality of finance coming into DeFi and essentially how they felt about decentralization versus centralization. And just kind of what the big players were hopefully gearing up to do in the DeFi world and more often or more reason of why they're not yet. So there was some good, interesting talks there. I think that the, I know we're going to end up talking about it, so I'll refrain. But I mean, that first panel, man, that dude, damn. I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah,
all the panels are great, actually. I was going to say, all the panels are great. I think everybody, out of all the speakers that we listened to, everybody had their own individuality. You know, everybody had their own vision that they were bringing to the table, which was nice. As we'll allude to, there was certainly a gentleman on the panel and in the building that was overbearing, to say the least. But everybody else there was pretty good. I actually really enjoyed the DeFi panel. One of the women that spoke, she was a part of Circle. She's now doing her own venture capital business, which is pretty cool. But she was head of financials for Circle. So it was nice to hear her view of a high level perspective in the space. And then there was another gentleman named Ali, that also provided huge, huge insight, on blockchain in general, the blockchain infrastructure, what he's been working on, where it's going, stuff of that nature, which was great. We did have a lot of good talks. We had a lot of good talks, and obviously we're not going to say what exactly came of it or what could come of it, but we definitely met a lot of great minds, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that was a good thing about that conference too. Like both of you had stated, the level of like diversity and backgrounds, you know, coupled with the it was sort of an intimate setting. So when the talks were over, we had opportunities to speak with people one on one, and you know, these people flew in from all over the country. And again, there was another guy there that unfortunately we didn't get to speak with him one on one. We kind of disappeared, but you know, we got his contact information, so I definitely want to reach out to him. But he had a vast business background, so he was definitely into blockchain and the technology behind it. But he wasn't a technologist; he was more on the business side and the needs of big corporations and customer facing applications for crypto, DeFi, and blockchain specific. And he worked for a lot of big companies.
That was an extremely unique insight, because that was not just looking at technological applicability, but just looking at the business applicability that, you know, nerds like all of us here don't even think about sometimes. And he wasn't even going as far as just like, you know, a high overview look at it, but he was looking at a systemic implementation across all business platforms and what on the business side of the house would be needed in order to build that up and kind of make that cohesive bond coming into Web3. And that was actually really refreshing to see, that you do have these business professionals that, you know, even though, again, some of the big players may not be talking about it as much publicly about what they're thinking about doing, but actually getting to see that there are building blocks and there's like standardized building blocks in place for what some of these companies are looking at doing with blockchain technology in general was really, really insightful.
Yeah, it was cool listening to it too. Like I think the guy, he said he worked for like Kraft and Coke and
PepsiCo, not Coke.
Oh, was it PepsiCo? My bad.
Yeah.
Apologize. You know, like some really big companies in a high level position too. And yeah, to get that insight as what they're looking for and how they need to utilize it. I definitely want to try to reach out to him and have a deeper discussion. But you can see Scooty asked right here on our Twitch right now about if anybody knew who Affinity was. So this conference was a little bit different than some of the other ones we went, in the sense that it wasn't really down in the weeds of BSC tokens or even Ethereum tokens or anything like that. It was more on the high level technology side of blockchain. And we did actually have a conversation with a couple of the gentlemen about, the difference in the focus, depending on who you are and whether it's cryptocurrency or it's the blockchain technology itself. And a lot of this conference, even though there was a DeFi panel that did naturally focus on some of the aspects of DeFi, it wasn't really necessarily at the token level really deep. It was mostly on the idea behind DeFi versus traditional finance and how DeFi can fix some things or change some things, but also the shortcomings of DeFi and what needs to be changed. So it's more of a high level. And I don't think that the people, I got the sense that the people that were involved in this panel, again, were mostly high level when they were thinking about this stuff. It was like Bitcoin, Ethereum. They talked about Solana a little bit. There wasn't much mention at all of, like I said, in the weeds of tokens. So, the 3 to 4 individuals on the panels that we talked to, I don't get the feeling that they knew who Affinity was, but I have a feeling that they wouldn't know who very many of the kind of low flying tokens were anyway. Cause that doesn't seem to be their forte. Chris, anything else you want to add to it?
That one dude that we spoke to, I forgot his name, very informative on, he was a consultant for working with blockchain technologies for companies.
Yeah, I think that's the gentleman that, that Zach was referring to, but I think he got the names mixed up. I think Ali was the, Ali or however you pronounce his name. I believe he was the one from the VC company.
He was. Yeah, you're right. It was from the VC. The other gentleman started with a G, I think. I don't remember.
Yeah, he went by GP.
Oh, GP. That's what it was to say. It was definitely a name from another country. So it's a little different, but makes sense.
Yeah, when he originally introduced himself, he just said, call me GP.
Yeah, that guy was super nice too.
Wrote mad books.
Yeah,
that were constantly books. That were constantly questioned by one panelist.
Yeah. So let's, I mean, Chris, I don't want to cut you off. You wanted to go on. I know you, I don't know if you had a follow on thought with that, but if not, let's talk about that guy for a minute.
This fucking guy.
Were you done with your thought, Chris?
I mean, how deep in the weeds do you want me to go on about that guy?
I want to hear about, I think we need to, people came to Affinity Protocol. They want to listen to it. They want to know how our time went. That was a key point in our adventure at this conference.
All right. You want me to start?
Go ahead, man.
All right, so first of all, this dude. You had a lot of people there that were representing companies that kind of labeled themselves as market disruptors, which is like it's a good thing. You know, we've talked about that since like day one about having disruption in the payment processing community and stuff like that. Disruptors can be really, really good for leading innovation. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind on that one. In that sense, disruption in the market is great. It's going to push people to come up with better, more efficient, cheaper solutions. And that's what is ultimately going to always be best for the consumer. This dude was a market interrupter. This guy would not fucking stop interrupting every single person to the point where someone, I don't know who, he wasn't even on the DeFi panel. Somebody gave this idiot a microphone and he was interrupting the DeFi panel as well. Like the guy like just couldn't understand that something that anyone was saying has been like proven fact that has been part of a reputable source, like a reputable publicized source to the point where, you know, GP was bringing up some stuff and the guy's like, oh, I need a reference for that. And the guy's like, it's in one of my multiple books that supported my doctoral PhD in AI technologies. And the guy's like, oh, I guess I'll have to read that then. Like,
yeah, it was in his published dissertation.
This dude sucked. he sucked. I don't even give a shit because I'm not going to say his name, but I'm like 80% sure this dude's probably on a sex offender registry. I mean, the very first thing he brought up when he was comparing like different types of web technologies, the very, very first thing he brings up is the missed connections page on Craigslist.
Yeah.
You go to any of the personals side of Craigslist. It has notoriously been known for other categories, not just missed connections. You know, the FBI wrote a huge paper on it before they took down that area of Craigslist.
Yep.
And a couple of other sites that were popular for this, right? So, like, you have that. Then he's talking about STDs as identifiable information for people. Like, there's no way this dude is not on a sex offender registry, or at least at some point been accused of. Yeah. Like, there's no doubt in my mind at all.
And then he probably went to trial and like told them how everybody's wrong and you know,
interrupted people.
Yeah, it was bad. Even the panel he was on, so they had a Web3 panel, which was the first one, and that's where GP is it? Yeah, that's what he was on, and he was the one who kept interrupting. Remember the woman from the audience actually had to tell him, "Can you please stop talking? I want him to finish. I need him to finish. He's making good points."
He kept interrupting GP, and the lady finally just yelled his name and was like, "Can you let him finish, please?" and he kept pushing to like move on to the next questions, like as if it was his panel and every single he had the last word. And as soon as his word was done, it was like, "I think we've satisfied this question."
Yeah.
Like, and every fucking time.
He was a smart dude. Like when he did talk, right, and made his points, he was smart. Like he knew what he was talking about. He made some really good points. But yeah, like, let other people make points. Like he was definitely controlling that entire.
Oh, trying to until he got yelled at.
Yeah. and that panel, and that's what was a little unfortunate about him, was that panel was the one with the one gentleman that had the business aptitude. And then the other guy that was on that panel, we got a chance to talk to him too. And he was a really smart individual that deals with he's part of a VC company that invests in a bunch of blockchain and Web3 companies. And we had an opportunity to talk to him later. And one thing I want to say about the whole VC process, angel investors and things like that, those things take sometimes months to play out. More times than not, they don't work out, right? The whole thing with talking to, big investment companies is talking to as many as possible, because you're going to get, 10, 20, 50 no's for every one. Yes. So, with this individual, the good thing about him is one, we got a lot of information and insight as to like what his company looks for specifically, what VCs in general do, to kind of compare that with our knowledge that we already had, because obviously the industry is always changing, especially with blockchain and the way the economy has been going. So kind of the sentiment of what investment money is out there and how that money is looking at companies to invest in. So he gave us a lot of insight, a lot of information. He seemed very interested in a lot of things that we were doing. But again, that's neither here nor there. It doesn't mean anything positive or negative is going to come. Obviously, a lot of positive came out of it because we got some good information, good insight. But anything beyond that, we don't know what's going to happen. We are going to reach out to him and some others again. But we'll see how things go. But he gave an incredible wealth of information.
So that number piece too, like he had mentioned this too, that his VC alone last month got 652 requests and they only approved 5.
Yeah.
But in 1 month. 652. And that, put in the math, that's more than 20 requests a day that they have to look at in a whole month, and they only accept 5.
Yeah.
So like, you got to think like these people do a deep dive into them. They're not just like skimming paperwork. So basically, if you don't catch attention within, you know, just a few slides of your pitch deck, you're fucked, or your business plan, you're fucked. Right. So, having, like Chris had said, having this preemptive talk, so we are already know what to approach with and what they're looking for, gives us a serious advantage.
And like Chris said too, like this guy, his company literally only invests in people that are developing good technology for the blockchain, and also primarily into gaming companies that are doing anything on the blockchain, which is a very unique area to be into. And when you have someone like that, and we're able to describe some of our products and some of our anticipated movement on the roadmap and what we're doing, and for him to sit there and cross his arms and go, "Huh, this is interesting," is actually like it's a really good sign that we're actually doing the right stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it's all about. Just like with anything, we have no idea what'll come of it or not come of it, but even if it doesn't work out, the feedback that we got based on given our pitch, letting him and a couple others know what we're doing, and the general, the genuine interest that people had in what we were doing, was feedback enough. And not only that, but again, some of the feedback he gave us on market valuations that they're seeing out there and revenue sources and what the industry is doing is extremely valuable, because we're going to be seeking more investors. So to get that information up front, we can tailor things to better position ourselves. So, hey, the next time we talk to another individual, we have even more information and we can put ourselves in a better spot to potentially make a good deal. So that was one of, for me on the business side, was one of the biggest takeaways that I got from that conference. And it was well worth it to hear that information because that it is difficult when you're in the company and you're doing these things and you know what you're doing to put a number value on things, you know, because you have to come up with a valuation. You have to come up with all this other information and to do that sort of in a bubble, without really enough feedback from the outside is difficult. So it was a good opportunity along with the technical side that we talked about is having these conversations with people and hearing some of the things that they know about that's happening, telling them what we're doing. And like Paul said, getting that feedback, like, wow, that's actually really cool. And not having somebody throw it back in your face and say, why would you even need that? Or, you know, there's already a million people doing that. Like, we didn't get any of that from, you know, the few people that we talked to. It was great.
I really want to emphasize that this was a really high level conference. Like, there was, you know, maybe 100 people there, if that. But everybody there had a very high level position, had a very high level approach to cryptocurrency. It wasn't just about tokens. It wasn't just about coins. It was about blockchain technology in general and how can we benefit the world and how can we benefit the space going further. It was actually very enlightening, to where you didn't just see, you know, again, I mean, I've been to the NFT Expoverse, I've been to Cryptopia, I've been to a multitude of these places to this point where it's everybody just trying to throw all these buzzwords in your face to draw your attraction to their booth. And then from there, it's just like, oh, okay, you're doing the same thing that I've already seen 100 times in the space. There was not any of that.
That's actually an interesting fact, Zach, because we did. Actually, before we even spoke to some people on the panels, specifically these people in their own right, we're bringing up all those facts you talked about with how, you know, everybody's doing whatever they can to just create temporary hype. And that includes, you know, just duplicating the same shit that's out there. They did talk about rug pulls. They talked about a lot of the stuff that we constantly talk about as being, you know, sort of the short term negatives or the short term pump and dump schemes out there. They mentioned it a lot with NFTs. They mentioned it a lot with DeFi and Web3 in general. And again, like you said, these people are involved in like the pinnacle of what we think of where blockchain can go. Like they were talking about, the data applications for it. You know, how right now that one gentleman was talking about, a lot about supercomputers and how, in order to really properly use blockchain for the things that we talk about with, you know, data transmission and storage, the medical industry, supply chain, either social media and all these other applications, you know, these are the things that they were talking about. It wasn't down to, you know, how, you know, how can we, launch the next 100x token and pump and dump, or how can we, you know, create whatever it is that we see time and time again on BSC. So it was refreshing to go to a conference that wasn't focused on, you know, quote unquote, shit tokens everywhere, you know, just pitching their next, pump. It was more about what we're looking to do and really push this industry and push this technology into next levels and come up with ideas that don't exist and fill those gaps that are needed for those applications to reach the broader markets.
Yes.
Chris had a good day there, though.
Oh, Chris was nerding out.
Chris had a good, what about that one nerd that was there? But anyway, hey, so. You know, just kind of break it up a little bit. I know there was you want to talk about that happened towards the end of the. So at the end when we were walking out, you want to tell that story, Paul?
I don't know, man, because I got home and told my wife that story, and she just looked at me like I was stupid. I was like, look, you kind of had to be there for it, but like, she just, she did not seem to care at all about how absolutely fucking hilarious it was.
You gotta tell it though. Hey, maybe one or two people that are gonna listen will find that funny, and the other five people won't. But
all right. So basically, Affinity Innovations core team, we all got our first experience. I believe first experience. Someone else, correct me if I'm wrong. If you've experienced this before, but we experienced our first all gender bathrooms. Nothing wrong with it. Pretty cool. The stalls were like, floor to ceiling. It made it so that like any of the commodities that would normally be in like a female bathroom were also in the men's bathroom, including like they had a bottle of mouthwash in there. Like, so like that part was pretty cool. Well, you can obviously tell like which bathroom used to be the men's bathroom and which bathroom used to be the women's bathroom, because there was actually signs on the outside where it would show, urinal, toilet, and something else like sink or something like that, right? And then there was one that had two toilets and then a sink. So you could be like, oh, okay, basically, process of elimination here, figuring it out. One of these used to be the women's bathroom, one used to be the men's. Well, I'm a urinal guy, so I'm going into the one that's got the urinals. So I, that's just me. So we're getting ready to leave. And Chris, little Chris is like, hey, we should go to the bathroom before we head out. And I'm like, you're not wrong. Like, I got that small bladder. Y'all hear on Affinity Friday all the time. I'm like, I'll be right back. I got to take a piss. So, again, this building was weird. So we basically had to, follow a maze to get to the bathroom. If we went the short way, we would have got locked out the building. Like, it was kind of stupid, right? So we're doing this. We're walking through this maze. We're going, getting to the bathroom and, go in there. I don't see anybody else in there. Right. So I'm like, this is it. It's just us. Chris goes in there. I'm doing my thing at the urinal. Man, all of a sudden, somebody, I'm not going to mention any names. If someone wants to bring up and say, yeah, that was me, they can say so. I'm not going to do it for them. Somebody let one rip. I mean, this thing lasted like 8 seconds. It's in the bathroom. It's loud and echoing. Like, this thing just gets absolutely fucking ripped. I'm a dude, man. That shit funny as hell to me. So I'm like choking back the laughter and I just go, God damn. Cause that was like, that was ridiculous, man. So I finish up. I leave the stall, and as soon as I open my stall door for my urinal to go out, sure as shit, there's one of the women that was just on the panel that we had just attended walking out of a different stall with this just fucking look on her face of like, what the fuck happened? So, I'm trying to, like, at that point, I'm like struggling to keep a straight face. Now I get to the sink. I chose wrong. I chose like the middle sink or something like that to wash my hands. Little Chris comes out his stall, straight face, like nothing's wrong. And I'm just looking at like, cause I can see both of them in the mirror washing their hands. And this girl's like furiously scrubbing her hands. Like she's trying to get off whatever cloud of stuff had just come out to her. Little Chris just washing his hands like nothing's wrong. And we just go, I'm trying so hard not to crack up this entire time, just cause the look on her face when she walked out of there said fucking everything. Man, you had to be there. It was fucking hilarious. And of course, old man over here, he had to see the other bathroom before he left. So he comes out that other bathroom and just looks at me and I'm basically crying because I'm laughing so hard at what just happened as I'm coming out of this bathroom and he just has no idea.
Yeah, come on, like what the fuck just happened? Yeah, so it obviously wasn't me. I was in the other bathroom. But yes, Ray, it was that particular venue had the unisex, and I've never been in one. Like, whatever, it's a bathroom, but it was just it was the funny mix between, it was the first time that we went into a facility that had that set up, and then that event happened. It's just, it's funny. That's why they call it bathroom humor. But yeah, that And fucking Paul's laughing for like 10 minutes.
Oh, man. That's by far probably the funniest thing that has happened to me like all calendar year, man. I'm not even kidding. All calendar year.
Yeah, maybe it's her.
I'm just saying, I know where the other urinal was and I know where the sound came from, but like, honestly, had I known that there was anybody else in that bathroom, I wouldn't have made a comment. I would have just been like, you know, hey, it's a normal bodily function, whatever. But just the fact that I thought that there was nobody else in there and it was just me and some, and that one person that I happened to know, and like, I had to make that comment.
She was, that lady was a previous regulator as well, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yes. She was
surprisingly.
Regulator. Yeah,
to give a little bit of insight on how this building was like, too, right? Because where this event was in the CIC building, right? And the floor that we were on, so I'm guessing IDEA's rented out the floor from the businesses that are on that floor. And some people were working, right? Let me put it this way. The people who worked on that floor had fucking work slippers, okay? When they got to work, they took off their shoes and they put on their goddamn work slippers, okay? This is how advanced this fucking place was. It was crazy. They had telephonic booths, right, where you can go in and close it. Like, you rent out space if you're going to make a phone call, and it was just, like, soundproof. You can go in. It was crazy. But everything there was high-tech. It was pretty rad, not going to lie. Kind of yep. Wish, you know, we could start doing, maybe we get the bar stood up, you feel me? A little employee lounge in the background, all the snacks on the doors and stuff, you know?
Yeah, we gonna get a bathroom just for a little bit, so I'm telling you that right now. he get his own thing, man.
There was also, this blew us away, we saw this right when we left, right? There was a spot, so, you know, imagine you had to, you know, take your key card out to hit the little buzzer to get through the door you gotta get through. There was an L-shaped platform next to the buzzer for your coffee.
Yep.
So if you had too much stuff in your hands while carrying a coffee, you could put your coffee on this thing next to the buzzer, buzz yourself in, grab your coffee. It was crazy.
You know how many You know how many times I've sat in front of a badge reader carrying too much stuff and I got it like dangling on a lanyard and I'm like doing like an awkward like almost dancing a half squat while I'm carrying all my shit and like thrusting my chest towards the badge reader to try to flip it around to scan the badge. Nah, man, these people live in the future, man. They got fucking little coffee holding containers for you carrying too much stuff. No problem. Watch this. Come
together right now. Over me. Yeah,
that was GD.
I did
all the time.
Many places. I do miss the coffee from that place, but that's about it.
Oh, hey, you know, speaking of the coffee from that place, you know how I was telling you that Bed Bath & Beyond going out of business and stuff like that? And they got K-Cups for that toasted marshmallow coffee.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, but I will say, because I know we want to talk a little bit about AI too, but I know one thing I will say that I found very informative from that as well was the amount of, you know, according to the people that were there, the amount of businesses that are actually already using blockchain and the ones that want to and why they're not. So that was important, right? It's one thing to say, oh, they're not, you know, the companies using it or not using it, but we don't know why they're not. Like, there was a lot of information on what was the potential, right? Not everybody works for every company, so we don't know exactly why, but some of the ideas and the people that did work for companies on what they're looking for to be able to start integrating it and moving into it. And it's funny because I'm sitting there listening to this panel and there was quite a few times where I'm thinking, we're doing that, or that's on our roadmap to do that, to fill that gap. So that was really cool to kind of get that insight in that position on, again, because this conference was such a high level, visionary on the technology, it was a much different perspective than what we're used to. We're very much used to seeing you know, again, the low level, tokenized, dApps and things like that, and what people are doing on, the existing chains and, you know, more of the intricate, tools and applications. We don't really hear much from the individuals that are really looking at this, from directly from their mouth, like the big picture and really how this is impacting, you know, global economics, or how it can and should, and why it's not reaching its full potential right now. That was probably one of the biggest impacts from going to that conference, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that kind of just hearing, because, you know, it's unless it's not advertised, and maybe it is, and it's just not as widely spread, or maybe, you know, we just live under rocks with some of the news that we try to look at. But like they mentioned a couple of times, the fact that there's a lot of utility being explored on private blockchains with some of these companies, like, and they brought up JP Morgan a couple of different times and talking about how JP Morgan did stand up a private blockchain, and they're doing some work with it there. And, you know, that's a stepping stone to having that be kind of translated almost to being used in public and actually having a viability for those financial transactions as well, right? Because you have someone who has a perfect use case for a private blockchain that is already functioning. And then what you were saying were, you know, you have these bigger players that are waiting to do something about it. It was even discussed that some of the waiting is that they want to see what the regulation is that's going to come down the line. And that had more to do with the DeFi aspect than just blockchain technology in general, but it still holds the same, because you have these people that are, you know, poised to use blockchain technology in theory for financial considerations that are waiting for the regulation before they really kind of say, hey, let's get moving. And at the same time, you have these other businesses who are utilizing private blockchain and basically testing stuff out to see what can and can't be done and get their proof of concepts completed so that when regulation comes out, they're already a little bit ahead of the game.
Yeah. And the one guy was talking about even how Pfizer was using it, their own private blockchain, to track efficacy data and all that, before he kept getting cut off a million times. But he was talking about that, and again, like, I had no idea.
Where's the reference for that? They were a client of mine.
Yeah.
That was the best part. Like, oh, do you have a reference that they're doing it? Like, yes, I built it for them.
Yeah.
I think he said, I built it and wrote a book about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got three friggin' books. And again, we got to talk to this guy afterwards, and to kind of reiterate some of the feedback we got on what we're doing, you know, to give a little bit more background on this guy, he works for a company that, he, you know, basically said that they just, whatever companies want, they custom build things for them, in blockchain and, you know, computing and things like that. And when we kind of discussed some of the things that we're doing going forward, and some of the things that we have going on, he was pretty impressed, and he liked the ideas, and, you know, we're going to have, you know, some follow up with him, because I think at the very least, we could leverage him for a wealth of knowledge. Like I said, this guy's got a PhD and wrote, three books and two published dissertations on, AI. I think his PhD is in AI, but also in blockchain. And the guy's like, hey man, if there's something else out there that I don't know, I'm just going to go learn it. If somebody needs me to do something, I'm going to learn it, and we're going to do it. So he's my kind of people. I know we all, you know, all of us are the same way. So, that hopefully will be a good contact going forward. But,
and we didn't interrupt him either. So
no. Yeah, but he definitely was one of those people that, like, he, when he started talking, he had an idea and he just ran with it. So,
he was you.
Yeah. Yeah, there was sometimes where, like, you think you have that break point. You know, in a conversation, you get that break point, and then you try to get in and
Also, old boy didn't even wait for a break point. He just put that microphone closer to his mouth than anybody else so that he would be louder. And that was that. Yeah. Like, you had everybody else holding the mic like a respectful distance away, so it wasn't like they were yelling at anybody. And then you had this boy that was basically shoving it down his throat to be louder than everybody else. God, that guy sucked. Like, I know we already all know that, but man, that guy sucked.
Yeah, he was the one dude that afterwards we didn't seek out to have a conversation with. Didn't have that kind of time. And I would actually like to have a conversation, not be talked at.
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of the gentleman that had the AI PhD, Chris, is there anything in particular that you wanted to bring up for this week's Vending Protocol that had to do with AI?
Yeah, the whole AI thing with people fearing to lose their jobs. I say it's comparable to when, for example, the automotive industry became automated itself. Everybody thought they're going to lose their jobs, but it was kind of the opposite. We saw more people who need jobs because who's going to maintain these systems? You still have to have guidance of a human to run these systems. And what comes with working with robotics, things like that, comes with a higher paycheck. So if you were one of the people that evolved with the times, you saw a higher paycheck. I think it's the same way with AI, where you're still going to need people to manage it. You're going to need people to input data. You're going to need people to manage the infrastructure behind it. And with all that, I think we're going to see more of a pay increase within the tech field of people who manage AI as a whole.
Yeah, and I think if anything, what you're going to see is a shift in, like just specifically what they're looking for in the workforce, right? So like take, you know, I won't, you know, go into too much detail on this one, but like take Chris knows about a particular unit in the military that converted from one unit to another, and they basically had to take all those people there and train them to work on what the new unit would be doing. So it's going to be the exact same thing, right? Where you have a bunch of people that are potentially looking at just having an industry shift very dramatically. And like you said, as long as they stay up with the times and they basically accept like, hey, you know, like this is happening, I can either get on board with it or I can fight it. Those people that get on board with it and move with the times are going to be perfectly poised to be a leader in that field that's going to be targeted towards maintaining or continuing development of AI systems.
Yeah, that was a perfect example too, because that did happen. And you know, obviously there's always, you know, some attrition, you know, when then you switch over. But the people that lost their jobs that, you know, wasn't because of retirement or whatever, was because they didn't. They fought it. They refused to you know, find out how to fix them or find out how to, you know, maintain the systems or build the robots that were building the cars. Like if you see it coming and you see what the potential is, then yeah, you need to educate yourself. You need to, you know, put yourself in a position to do that. And Paul ain't wrong. Like I went through that and we took a bunch of aircraft maintainers, spent their whole lives, mechanical, electrical, whatever it is, fixing fighter jets, and then said, okay, now we're going to train you to be either an IT person or an Intel person or anything like that. Vastly different worlds. But you know what? The majority, probably 75% of the people, went with it, and a lot of them weren't happy. But they did it and it was very successful. So yeah, that's really what needs to happen. If you feel that your position or your job is being threatened by AI, figure out how you can become part of it, you know, whether it's building AI, maintaining it, obviously these things like that was also talked about at the conference is AI is still built by humans. All of this stuff is essentially built by humans. So is it going to be error free? No, it's definitely not. So we can't look at it like, well, it's something that's autonomous and it's just going to fix itself. Hey, maybe in 20, 30 years it might, which is scary as hell. But it's not. It still needs to be constructed and maintained by humans.
And that was actually they kind of segued with AI in the DeFi panel as well, because that was one of the things that got brought up was, you know, the flood of smart contracts onto various blockchains, and how that's exactly where they brought up, and they said, you know, humans make a lot of errors. And that's exactly right when you're looking at the applicability of AI to look at correcting or writing and, you know, writing and automatically deploying smart contracts is the AI is only going to be as smart as the information that it's fed. So when you look at something like an old or a known vulnerability or an issue, obviously, as long as the AI engine has that information, it has the ability to protect against it. But if there's, you know, there's all sorts of new stuff, like that's why there's a whole category called zero-day attacks for basically new vulnerabilities, unfound vulnerabilities. You're not going to be able to, you know, without something like as robust as quantum computing with the, you know, the best AI that we still don't yet have, you're not going to be able to feed enough information and say something like develop me a smart contract that has literally zero security vulnerabilities. And that still doesn't factor in the human error part in general of social engineering, because most of the time as well, if you were to look at statistically, not necessarily how much money, but statistically, the amount of times that there's an exploit, most of the time it is because of someone giving up their seed phrase, not knowing that they shouldn't be giving up their seed phrase, whatever. It's actually a much lower percentage of times that there's an actual exploit in something like a smart contract that is taking someone to the bank. Obviously, you hear about it more because it's typically a lot more money. But, you know, if someone gets my seed phrase right now for my personal wallet, they ain't getting as much money as they're getting if they exploit a smart contract. So obviously, attention and media is going to point towards someone making off of millions or even, you know, high hundred thousands. But when it comes down to it, just like Chris said, this is made and generated by humans and fed information that is made by humans. So there's going to be fallacy.
Side note, you know how I went to a conference in Texas? I actually had a conversation like this with one of the developers, basically just talking about how AI itself, this is a little sidetrack, the AI itself will always be biased because humans are biased. Because like you said, we're the ones building the AI models. And until we can find some sort of unbiased data, AI itself always just make decisions or similar decisions like humans did, because once again, it's taking that data that which was created by humans.
Yeah, exactly. That data has to come from somewhere. So even though it's machine learning and it can adapt and kind of, you know, use that information to come up with better logic, all of that information was at some point developed by or you know, put out there onto the internet or wherever that information is coming from by somebody like you or I or anybody else out there that is a human being. So it has to decipher that. And, you know, maybe, like I said, maybe, you know, in years to come, it can do a better job with future proofing, like Paul was saying with deploying smart contracts. Yes. By gathering all the information from past examples. Maybe it's better at catching certain things, you know, that are known vulnerabilities. But as far as knowing what the future is going to bring and say, hey, let's develop this AI to catch things that don't even exist yet, we're definitely not there. So even when it comes to AI driven applications, if you're writing a script and, you know, whether it be Python or whatever, and you're getting a little help from, you know, ChatGPT or whoever, understand that information is coming from applications that were developed and it's putting this stuff together, but it's not going to necessarily be error free for those things that we mentioned. Definitely not at this point, especially not future proofed for things that are going to come around the corner. So you damn well better still know what you're doing, because you still got to do your own manual reviews and things like that.
Well, that's where the confirmation. Or excuse me, not the confirmation. I was going to say confirmation bias, but the bias of human input to AI models is going to drive decisions. Like if I list all of the ingredients for a generic chicken parmesan, and I go to ChatGPT and I say, hey, here's all of my ingredients. I want you to make me a recipe with that. There's a high probability that it's going to spit out a chicken parmesan recipe without me saying I want chicken parmesan. But that's just because of the models and the information that it has access to is going to say that there's a higher probability of having a successful recipe for chicken parmesan with all of these ingredients than to actually come up with something truly unique. So there's a kind of almost it's artistry saying that, you know, AI development is an art, because sure it is. But when you look at it, it's just an input and output of logic and logical information And we're just not there yet to really get over that cusp, like Little Chris was saying about, you know, removing that bias so I can do the exact same experiment, put in all the ingredients and say, you know, make me a recipe with this and have it be a 50-50 shot even of it being chicken parmesan versus something else.
I want some chicken parm.
I know, I'm kind of hungry now too, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all good stuff. I can't, you know, I'm waiting to see, and it's exciting to see where the industry goes. And I know it's also a scary time as well. Would we have, who was it that stepped down? Chris, I know me and you were talking about this not too long ago. Was there a gentleman that stepped down from, was it Google?
Oh, about the, yeah, he helped create ChatGPT in Google Bard. He basically stepped down because
he was the head of AI, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he was the head of AI. He basically helped develop both ChatGPT and Google Bard. If you don't know what Google Bard is, essentially just Google's AI version. It's currently in closed beta. But he essentially said that he had to leave the projects because he regrets his work. So the main thing that popped into my mind with similarities is basically Albert Einstein and the whole team of people who made the nuclear bomb. It was a big development step ahead, which opened us for a lot of other technologies based off of the foundings they had with nuclear, was it nuclear fusion or fission? One of the two.
Yep.
So it's kind of similar. Big technology that has the chance to make big strides, but it is scary because you know how humans are. Humans always have that innate factor of trying to be better, trying to one up someone, or trying to take control of people. So it would be potentially possible to maybe use something nefarious with AI.
Yeah, and that brings up another point to kind of tie this back into some of the conversation that was happening yesterday. Was there was discussion on that with not only with AI but also blockchain. Is, you know, when there was a question that the young lady asked about what's, I believe it was her and not the other gentleman, but either way, that it was, what's some of the good and what's some of the bad about DeFi or blockchain. And that was kind of what was brought up was, it's great. It's a great technology and there's a lot of things that can be solved and done with it. But at the same time, because it is, unregulated and even when there is regulation, the point of it is to be kind of in the hands of the developers and the people that are running it. That's why it's called DeFi, decentralized. That bad actors or people that have nefarious intent have a much broader set of tools and a much broader set of opportunity to do bad things. And sort of like what you're talking about with AI is really this could be extremely powerful and extremely helpful. But at the same time, just like you're talking about with nuclear stuff, right? Like when you get to that level, like that wasn't really, well, who knows behind the scenes what was actually being talked about, but I would like to think that was more in lines of trying to advance power technology and other things, rather than looking at it like, hey, how can we make this bomb that's going to kill, you know, millions of people over the course of decades, when we drop it on them. So there's an intent and then there's what it actually gets used for.
Oh no, the intent was to bomb innocent people.
Yeah.
We all know that.
That's
what the Manhattan Project was all about.
I know. I'm trying to be optimistic about it.
No, but it's interesting to look at someone who's a lead AI developer or, you know, leading the AI development team that's stepping down from it when you have all sorts of, obviously AI is still in its infancy, but you have all sorts of these other examples of bad AI models. Look at the most popular memes for the new Snapchat AI model right now is people talking to it and saying, you know, something along the lines of like, hey, do you have access to my location? And the AI bot chat bot says, no, I don't. And they keep pushing the issue about, do you have access to my location? And the answer is no, I'm not allowed to, that kind of thing. And then they ask it and they say, hey, what's the closest McDonald's to me? And the AI bot immediately responds with where the factual closest McDonald's is to them. So it kind of shows that, like, when you're looking at the development process, some of these AI models, it's not perfect because here it is, obviously predisposed to give a certain answer based on a particular question. But when you ignore that question has already been answered and dive deeper into that subject, it's willing to give a response. So it's that's where you can easily have someone in that instance step down and say, I'm not a fan of what is being created here, because it could be used as a bad actor across the internet.
No, it's extremely scary. I saw that too. Another one that I saw, which, you know, I'll preface right now that I don't care what you want to do with your life, what you choose to be. You could be a goddamn doorknob if you choose to. But this is a little scary because, I mean, I got kids. Almost everybody else here on the team has kids, and actually all of us do. We all help and take care of kids. So, I saw one where this person was posing as a 13-year-old child talking to the Snapchat AI, and started talking about gender reassignment. And the AI, after, you know, a lengthy conversation, found doctors that do gender reassignment for children. Like, it's wild. It's absolutely fucking wild what this thing can find out and where it can lead people.
Yeah, and that's a whole nother sensitive topic as well, because that's kind of when it plays into mental health, right? Like, I remember when some of the apps started coming on the scene, that you could get mental health on apps. You didn't have to go see a doctor. You can talk to, and they were anonymous, some of them, and things like that. And that's where I can see, you know, AI. There's already, I think, a couple AI like chat apps out there, but you could probably imagine what they're really used for. But when it gets into that kind of thing, because really with mental health, it's best to have that human element, because emotions play a lot into that, right? And AI by default doesn't, like, there's no emotion in computer software. So it's going to just be very cut and dry, and you can kind of, you can tailor your questions in a way where you're going to get answers that you want to hear. And that's not helpful for people. And I can see that in the early stages, maybe someday they'll perfect it, but I can see in the early stages that being a real problem, because people are going to get the validation that they're looking for, maybe even subconsciously, just by asking the right questions, to whatever their particular issue or problem is that they're looking to seek help for. And the AI is going to give them the answers that they want to hear, because there's no emotion. There's no logic, you know, like, human logic involved. It's just all computer driven, data driven. So I can see that as a huge problem up front, because it's going to happen.
I hate to pull a dude that was on the panel, but I think we satisfied the hour long podcast.
I was just going to wrap it up. We'll give everybody opportunity. If you got anything else you want to throw out there, last thoughts on this week's podcast.
Nah, man, it was a good time up there. A lot of information, a lot of considerations for, you know, what to be looking at moving forward. And I'm ready to get my ass outside and enjoy this nice weather.
Hell yeah.
Still Zach's Thunder. We got Affinity Friday coming up on Friday. Stay tuned for that. Like old man said, Mother's Day is on the next week, the 14th. And yeah, that's all I got.
Cool. Now that Paul and Chris said anything that I was going to say, I'll just go fuck myself. And, you know, I hope everybody has a great weekend. I myself am at work for today until 7 o'clock. So I will not be enjoying this wonderful weather. No, same thing. I believe that there will be, what I'm looking for to be a good outcome from, again, in the long term from this event. You know, we did meet a lot of people that we need to follow up with that were very interested in what we have going on. And this isn't from just like our partnership standpoint. This is from a funding standpoint as well. So we're gonna look more into that. As everybody knows, this is the realm that we're going to anyways, what we're working on anyways. So yeah, no, that's really it. Keep on plugging away. We're going to look at the next one. I think we already have a few in line in which that we can get to that are a lot. What I mean by events that we can get to that are from here all the way down to Florida that are within our range. And then there is some that are going to happen over on the West Coast towards the end of the year, even in the October area. So we're going to keep our eyes out and see which ones we can't get the team to again. Well, that's it. I hope everybody has a great weekend and hope everybody else enjoys the weather.
Oh yeah. Thanks everybody. And, just Ray, you'll have to listen to the recording, but I will throw out there, like I did mention in the beginning, I did go bowling last night and I played two games. I bowled 100 and 115. Not great. but I did beat my wife in both games. So that's all. That's all I got.
A win's a win.
That's right. It was actually a group of teenagers that was sitting across from us at the next lane, and one of them looks over at me and he goes, "I'm assuming you're Chris." He's like, "Man, you're not letting your wife win." I said, "Bro, I've been married 25 years or 24 years. Those days are long behind me, man. She wouldn't hesitate to whoop my ass in something she was better than me at. You're going to have to earn that win."
Side note for Paul and the old man, I did play some top golf this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So you ready to hit the course or what?
I don't know if my, me personally, I know my swings were ass, but apparently I was beating everyone. So apparently not as bad as I think, but definitely would need some work on it.
Ah, screw mechanics, man. As long as you're making contact and the ball's in play, that's all I'm at. Oh shit. All right. We'll have to get on the course sometime, but in the meantime, thank you everybody for tuning in to, this, early Sunday morning Affinity Protocol. I know, especially early for those of you on the West Coast. Zach, I know I just, we'll talk about it, going forward, but obviously we significantly, lower listeners on Sunday morning compared to the last couple of them. So we'll talk in the future, but anyway, thank you all for turning out. Hope you have a great rest of your Sunday. Great week. We'll see you on Friday. And again, don't forget about Mother's Day for all those mothers out there. You know, take care, everybody. So we'll see you soon. On that note, we're out of here.
Hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
That's all, folks.